Taking control of our money is an ideal we all strive for. IRAs, 401ks, stocks, bonds, savings accounts. These and other financial products are designed to set us up financially. However, when used improperly, these products could actually lose money for us. Trading stocks without the proper knowledge and research can be extremely risky and expensive. Betterment was launched in 2010 and became a pioneer in the world of robo-investing. Artificial intelligence can make recommendations to you to keep your financial goals on track. As you add more accounts into your Betterment portfolio, which could also include the 401k being provided by your current employer, your individualized retirement advice will continue to change based on your goals. Betterment provides no-fee cash reserve accounts and also has a checking account currently in beta. The cash management system can keep both accounts running optimally by moving excess money based on your spending habits from checking to cash reserve. The system will also move money from cash reserve to checking if the checking account balance is getting too low and there is a risk of overdraft. In this episode, Mike Royst, president of retail at Betterment, joins me for a conversation about robo-investing and the future of money management. Mike Royst is the president of retail at Betterment. Mike, welcome to FinTech Daily.
Hi, Ben. It's great to be here.
Awesome. Well, I tell you what, I'm really excited about this episode because I'm actually a user of Betterment, and there's a little bit of personal bias there about wanting to speak with someone from Betterment, and really excited to have you on the show and to talk more about, you know, Betterment and money management and robo-investing and all those things. So I just want to start with kind of a little bit about your background and kind of how you got to the role that you're in now.
Yeah, of course. So I took a little bit of a path to get here, I think. So I grew up in the U.S. in Indiana specifically, and I was pursuing a career in software engineering. And I actually started off in the financial industry back in 2008. And it was a pretty interesting time because the firm I worked at did a lot of stress testing of bank balance sheets. So in the middle of the mortgage crisis, this was, you know, perhaps one of the more interesting times in history to be in that space. And I got to learn a ton about finance, how the industry works, what drives people, what motivates them and otherwise. And I learned a ton. And after doing that for a couple of years, I decided the startup thing was starting to really take off kind of across the country. The Valley was obviously a big deal, but I had my eyes set on New York City. And I decided to leave finance and hop around some startups in New York and learn more about, you know, building teams, building technology, and finding, you know, interesting missions to invest my time in. And so after doing that for several years in New York City, one of the companies I had been working at was recently sold, and I was looking for my next opportunity, and I came across Betterment. I happened to be a user at the time myself, and a friend of a friend introduced me to the founder of Betterment, John Stein, and we just spent some time together and really hit it off. And Betterment had recently raised some money, and they were growing their engineering team, and I fell in love with the mission and what the company was all about, and decided to take that job. I started off leading software engineering teams internally at Betterment. This was quite a while ago, back in 2013. The company was pretty small. There was, you know, a total of about 10 engineers, maybe 30 to 40 in the whole company. And the company just kept growing, right? This was when robo-advisors were really coming into the market and scaling rapidly. And I just kept growing my career at Betterment, running larger and larger teams. And I've always had a really strong lean towards product. I love coding. I love technology. But for me, it was always a means to an end of solving problems. And if those problems were directly affecting customers I could talk to, interact with, that was just very fulfilling, very energizing for me. And I just kept doing that. And as I leaned more and more into product, I found myself advocating and pushing for us to take the company in different directions, build new things. And a couple of years ago, you know, we're not done with investing as a concept, as an investment. We're going to continue building that into the core of the product. But expanding beyond that has always been part of the Betterment vision. And banking services, money management, these sorts of concepts were really exciting to me. And as an internal advocate to invest heavily there, I was given the opportunity to lead our efforts into building out savings products, checking products, and otherwise, and given the opportunity to kind of serve as a general manager of those initiatives. And that's been going on for a couple of years now. And a lot of those things have come to market. Others are coming to market soon. And now I'm the president of the entire retail business, driving the, you know, product vision, the roadmap and execution. And it's great. It's a really exciting time. And I'm really loving my life, my job day to day. It's great.
That's fantastic. And I know a lot of our viewers can relate to kind of your path as far as software engineering. And then we were fortunate enough to have a friend or a mentor that kind of introduced us to the person that gave us our big shot. So that's great. And I think that's kind of a pro tip for all of us that want to move on to the C-suite level or the president level as you are. So really excited to hear your background. And now I want to kind of switch gears and talk a little bit more about money management and personal finance. I just love talking about this topic in general. I think all of us can take at least one more step towards setting ourselves up for retirement and being in a good financial position. So I always like to level set on personal finance and money management, and that's really where the core of what you do. So let's just kind of, you know, assuming that, you know, you don't have debt, right? We all agree that we need to be saving and investing for the future and figuring out better ways to manage our money. So just as a kind of an aside for the millennials that are listening to our episode today, you know, what's the first thing that you would tell them about money management?
Oh, of course. It's a great question. There's a lot of things I would want to tell them. I think one thing, especially millennials sometimes forget, that I would consider is, you know, appreciate what you don't know and consider that you might need some help. And, you know, not all financial advisors need to be considered evil. You can reach out and you can find really good fee-based financial advisors who can help you get started, figure out your financial plan and otherwise. So just consider that as an option, if you find some of this stuff intimidating or scary. The thing I wouldn't want to do is give people so much information they just sort of sit back and end up doing nothing, because the opportunity cost of doing nothing is massive. It will have a complete, unbelievable impact on your livelihood in retirement. If you don't get started early, or if you make some, you know, really, really tough, hard decisions early that don't work out for you. So that's one thing I always like to tell people. But the other thing I like to tell people is, before you try to get into the details, right? What's a stock? What's an ETF? What's a bond? Which broker dealer should I look at using? Before you do any of that, like, make sure you understand a little bit about what you're actually trying to achieve, right? Are you just trying to plan for retirement? Are you trying to save for some big long-term purchases? Are you just trying to ensure you have a strong safety net because you're worried about job security? Like, what are the actual objectives, the goals you're trying to achieve or fulfill? That's pretty important, because the answers to those questions would actually point you in very different directions around how much money you should save, what sort of investments you should consider. Those are really, really important. And so that's where I always sort of start those conversations. And then they end up going in a lot of different directions potentially, but that's always where I start. A couple other just asides I'll mention that I think are hugely important. The first is the concept of paying yourself first, right? Once you understand a little bit about those goals, what you're trying to achieve, you can use tools, use Excel, use a platform like Betterment. There's a lot of things in the world to help you go from those objectives to figuring out how to invest, how much money you need, and otherwise. So make sure you're doing that stuff first. Prioritize it. You know, take that money out of your paycheck and put it in your 401k before it lands in your bank account, right? You want to, you know, make sure that you're spending responsibly and doing the right things. And the best way to do that is to sort of work backwards from ensuring that you're paying yourself first for your longer term goals. Because, you know, as humans, we won't do that naturally, right? That's not how we're hardwired. Another thing I like to mention to folks is, also, don't take that to the extreme, right? There's been a lot of, you know, latte shaming or avocado toast shaming, and like people criticizing millennials in particular for spending money on silly things. I would say you should certainly be mindful of your spending and savings patterns, but don't forget that you should live your life today as well. Right? Don't take it to the extreme and forego every bit of happiness you could have today for the long term. Make sure there's some balance there. I see a lot of people go too far in both directions. And a lot of times we fail to mention the fact that, you know, live your life today too.
Oh, that's great. And I will say I do enjoy a good piece of avocado toast myself. I'm not a millennial, but it is good. So I do thank you for putting us off the hook there for sure. So you mentioned 401ks kind of briefly there as you kind of talking about how you unpack some kind of basic money management goals. So I know that for my own personal story here, I was at one company, ended up moving to another company, and I had a 401k at the previous company and decided to roll that over into a Betterment account. So that's obviously one thing that people can do, as well as, you know, just maybe you want to try to manage an active 401k, not through your employer, but through Betterment itself. So I'd love to just tell our listeners a little bit more about Betterment's 401k business and kind of how people can easily get into that.
Absolutely. So, well, let me start with unpacking your scenario just a little bit more. So remember, so 401ks, right? A 401k is very simply a way to save in a more tax-efficient manner for retirement, right? You can put away money before or after taxes today, and then that helps you save on taxes in the future when you're retired and meet certain criteria. And so that's a really massive win, depending on your tax bracket. And so that's the starting point. So if you have a 401k available to you, you should definitely consider using it. And how much to save is a tricky personalized question, but you should get help if you don't know how to answer that question yourself. So that's the starting point. The second point is one of the things a lot of people do is after they leave their job, right? When you remain employed somewhere with an active 401k, you have to leave that 401k alone. You can continue to contribute to it, but you have to leave it at the current provider, if you will. But once you leave that job, you have the ability to typically leave that 401k alone and leave it where it lies. Or you can decide to roll that over to transfer it, if you will, somewhere else. There's a lot of reasons you might want to transfer. You might want to roll it over into your new 401k at your new employer just so there's, you know, one less thing to manage and you can consolidate. You also might want to roll it over into an IRA at another company. This can help you potentially save on fees. This might help you have better investment options. It might provide better advice. It's also often the case, and you just have to check with your own employer, once you leave, oftentimes you start paying some of the fees on the 401k that your employer used to cover. So that's something that people miss a lot, where they didn't notice it because the employer, when you were working there, subsidized it, and then that goes away, and all of a sudden you're actually paying some pretty big fees. So that's something to watch out for. So that's a little bit about what a 401k is and why you might want to transfer it or roll it over after you leave that employer. So Betterment does a couple things that I think are pretty interesting here. The first is you can aggregate your 401k that's active that you're contributing to, and we will incorporate that into the retirement advice that we give. That's point one. But the second point is we also have a business where we power the 401k plans at employers. That's a new business for us. It's been around for a couple of years now. So it's large. We have several hundred employers on that business. We're powering their whole 401k. And what's really cool is their employees get that experience, and then it integrates seamlessly into the rest of the Betterment experience for the whole money management suite that we've built around retirement savings as well.
Perfect. And just taking that one step further, so you've got 401ks, you've got IRAs, and now Betterment also has a cash management account. So if you could tell us a little bit about that, and then for those who are looking to go all in this realm, whether it's with Betterment or another company, but specifically for Betterment in this context, you know, if you're going all in, what would that look like as far as your 401ks, your IRAs, this cash management account? You know, how do you see someone really maximizing all of Betterment's products?
Absolutely. So let's start with the cash management aspect a little bit. So historically, Betterment was a long-term investing company, right? We were typically helping people invest for goals that were, you know, many years away, if not, you know, something like retirement, which could be several decades away. And so as we build out that business, we've always intended to expand and provide more and more financial services because you can do really, really powerful things. You can really build something that's greater than the sum of the parts. And so one of the rather obvious areas you would eventually want to get into on the, you know, adjacency of investing is money management, right? People have checking accounts, people have savings accounts, and these short-term day-to-day money needs. you can do a lot of really powerful things if you build out support for those products. In addition, those particular spaces have a lot of problems in the American financial services industry, right? In the same way that when Betterment started, we were acknowledging that there were a lot of problems with the investing space. It wasn't serving customers in the way you might want. The same is true of banking, right? As it stands today, right? Everyone's familiar with fees, account fees, overdraft fees. You don't have enough money in the account, so that's a fee. There's lots of things going on there, right? Some ATMs might be reimbursed, many are not reimbursed. Like, there's just a million ways to be charged new fees. Also, many of these accounts just don't pay that much in terms of interest, if any interest at all. So your money's just sitting there, losing to inflation. You're paying a lot of fees. You're not being serviced very well. And they're also not providing you a ton of advice around what should I do with my cash, right? Should I really have this much money in my savings account, or should I be saving some of it elsewhere for a longer term goal where maybe I should invest it to drive a higher risk-adjusted return, something like that. And so Betterment has tried to surround more of those problems by building out more products. We have a product called Cash Reserve, which is similar to a savings account. It's a little bit different in how it works, but it still has a lot of the same qualities, a lot of FDIC insurance. It earns one of the highest rates in the country. So that's one product we have. And then also we have checking available in public beta. So we have, you know, thousands and thousands of people using this product right now, and we're going to make that fully available early next year. And these products bring some qualities to the market around unlimited worldwide ATM reimbursements. I mentioned that Cash Reserve has one of the highest rates in the country. But there are no fees for any of these products. You will not be surprised when an account fee or an overdraft fee or any of these things show up, because they don't exist. And so what's really cool, though, is you step out of that money management realm. You can think back to, how is this, you know, collection of things greater than the sum of its parts? And that brings us back to the 401k and the investing side. You can do really powerful things for customers when you're managing all of their assets in one place. A simple example would be tax coordination, right? So in effect, the way you invest money across different types of tax sheltered accounts, pre-tax, post-tax, and then also accounts that are not tax sheltered, is very, very optimizable, right? There's a lot of different qualities. And as software engineers, you recognize whenever there's entropy in a system where different pieces have different qualities, you can optimize. You can put those things together in a way that will have substantially better results for you in the long term, right? One of the things Betterment talks about is, if you do all this stuff together and save, you know, 30 years for retirement, you might have up to 38% more dollars than you otherwise would have. And of course, that's research. And of course, you have to figure out if those assumptions apply to you. But those are pretty reasonable assumptions for millennials making a reasonable income in the United States, given the tax situation. So those are things you can look into, but you can do really powerful things. And some of the things, looking a little bit forward, will be more and more automation, right? That's where this gets really cool. Because again, once everything's under a single umbrella, you can do things like manage cash flows between a checking account, a cash reserve, and even your, you know, IRAs and your retirement accounts. You can imagine bringing in that paycheck and distributing it all across those accounts seamlessly, right? One of the things Betterment does today is, if you have both a checking account and a cash reserve account at Betterment, and that checking account can be external to Betterment, actually, we will monitor your spending and the balances in that checking account and automatically move excess cash from that account into a high yield cash reserve account, helping you earn a lot more on your money without any effort. And what we do that basically no one else will do is, we'll do the flip side as well. If that checking account gets low on dollars and we think you're at risk to overdraft, we will actually sweep money out of Betterment back into that checking account. That might be somewhere else. That means we wouldn't be making money on it, et cetera, but it's the right thing to do for customers. And that's something else that we'll do. So that's a little bit about how we think about pulling stuff together under one umbrella.
That's fantastic. It really is encouraging for all of us, especially those of us like myself, to have young kids. And, you know, when they're old enough to start making their own money, they'll have a lot of tools at their disposal to help them make smart decisions with their money. So this is great stuff. Let's switch gears just a little bit and kind of get a little bit more into the details about robo investing, right? I remember when I started looking at Betterment a few years ago, being a technologist myself, it was like, okay, how is this really working? Because without knowing much about it, it just seemed like just a way to take people out of the equation. But obviously, there's a lot more to it that I've learned over the past few years. So just give us a quick history about robo-investing itself, and then talk about how robo-investing and human investors can work together.
Sure, absolutely. So Betterment really launched the robo-investing category. That name robo-investing didn't exist at the time, or robo-advisors is how we've sort of been billed by the press. But Betterment launched back in 2010 at a big sort of startup event in New York City called TechCrunch Disrupt. And Betterment was really the first robo-advisor in market at the time. And just quickly, the premise, right, of robo-investing was sort of similar to some of the philosophy I described early, in that, you know, don't ask people about what ETFs they should buy, what stocks they should buy, what mutual funds they should buy. Ask them the things they should better understand, what they want their money to do for them, and then take care of those other details for them. Help them build a portfolio, help them automate the investments, rebalance for them, tax loss harvest for them, etc. So automate and take the human side out of the mechanical pieces that we can optimize, and keep the human focused on the planning, the goal setting, and making tough decisions sometimes when, you know, the market shifts. Should we change our goals? Should we change the way we're thinking about the future? Because some of these things are not predictable and you have to react to new information. And so that's where some of that interplay really comes in. So Betterment launched in 2010. It saw pretty rapid growth. There were other companies that launched shortly thereafter, and several of us have emerged over the years. There was actually at one point several hundred robo-advisors in just the United States alone, let alone the rest of the world. We've seen that come back down quite a bit. There's been a few, Betterment included, but a few other players who have sort of survived over the last several years and really continue to grow and thrive. And that's a little bit about where the robo-advisor space came from and a little bit about where we're at now. And you're seeing Betterment and others start to expand well beyond sort of robo-advising into some of these other categories we mentioned to better service our customers, strengthen and broaden the businesses, and otherwise. One aspect of Betterment that's differentiated us from some is we've always had an interesting balance on the human side of investing. And I'll actually interpret that a little bit broadly. Part of this is Betterment prides itself on its customer service. We think a lot about simple stuff, call hold times, email response times. We want to make sure we provide people a lot of support and a little bit of that human touch, even for the simple stuff, the technical details, getting signed up, getting things moving, and just getting help. But in addition, we have fully licensed CFPs on the platform that are available. And so for customers that want a little bit more of that attention, for some of those customers who want to talk to an expert on the phone, we have that fully available in a couple different ways on the platform. But it's pretty easy to get someone on the phone and talk to them about anything you need help with on the platform, whether it's fully building a financial plan or, you know, you're having trouble logging in and need to reset your password. So Betterment's been a little bit more willing than some to include those humans in the story longer term. Others have been trying to take a little bit more ruthlessly automated approach where you shouldn't need to call us. It's all done via software, things like that. It's just different companies with different philosophies targeting different customers. That's really what's happening here. And one other aspect about Betterment, to go back to the human side, is I mentioned, so we have the consumer business that we've talked a lot about. I mentioned that we have a 401k business. We also power a lot of human advisor businesses directly, right? Independent financial advisors will use the Betterment platform to help manage the assets that they're advising on their clients for. And so that's actually a big part of our business too. That business has actually been around for quite a while, longer than the 401k business, and is a big part of our growth as well.
So given everything that you've kind of laid out for us so far, you know, who is Betterment's target audience, right? So I imagine someone that's just new to all this is kind of listening to thinking, oh, well, this is just kind of a set it and forget it model, which it kind of is, but to really take advantage of all the things that you've mentioned so far, there's a little bit more to it. So like, who is the target audience, and you know, who do you think could really take advantage of this the best way?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to separate the question into sort of two parts on the target audience. The first is, you know, Betterment has a grand vision and mission to service Americans of all incomes, of all ages, and of all diversity dimensions you could really consider. We really do want to service everyone. Now, obviously, you can't build a business very well if you're not focused and targeted and growing from one area into another. And so right now, the way we would describe our target customer, who we're really building for week to week, month to month, year to year, is millennial professionals and their families. Okay. So we're definitely going to skew younger, looking at millennials, folks who are often very excited about using technology to solve these problems. We're looking at professionals, folks who are typically cash flow positive. They're saving money. They have long-term goals. They have, you know, this excess cash to invest. And then the family side is another sort of slice on the millennials where they're not super well serviced, right? What typically happens is a single member of a family, a couple or a broader atomic family, they will have a single CFO, if you will, in that family who basically manages everything. And the tools don't make it super easy to share that information with your spouse or partner or give them the ability to control some of it over here. Like, people end up doing like very, very funny workarounds because, you know, even though a lot of platforms support joint accounts and other things that seem like they might make it easier, the software and the experiences are pretty suboptimal. And so that's an area of Betterment's investing really heavily to try to better service that broader use case, even beyond a singular user. We want to help families manage their finances better, not just the individual in the family who happens to manage it, because that's often the result of the fact that there's no products to help them manage it as a family more cohesively. So that's a little bit about how we think about the target customers today.
That's a great distinction. And truly, you know, in years past, generations past, there would be one guy, typically the dad, right, that would be in charge of all the money. And that's just how things were. But obviously, things have changed a lot going into 2020 here in a couple of weeks. So it's great that you've switched that focus and to allow the family to really just know what's going on with their money. I think it's important, especially as I mentioned, the kids get older and start to have their own money. They want to be smart with it, too. So I think the way that you've approached this whole thing holistically makes a lot of sense. So that's great to hear as well.
Yeah, thanks. We're really excited.
Awesome. So with that said, obviously, you mentioned there were hundreds of robo-investors at one time, and that's kind of gotten scaled back. The ones that were kind of not ready to scale and compete have kind of fallen off, if you will. So now we're kind of back to the core. Mm-hmm. Wealthfront is one of those, obviously, and you can go to NerdWallet and kind of check out some of the top investing robo-investors, if you will. But you've mentioned some of this so far, but what are the key differences, really, between Betterment and some of the other top robo-investors?
Yeah, it's a great question. I get it a lot. It's sort of funny. We can often look rather similar at a distance, but we're actually quite different when you really zoom in. And, you know, before I go deeper on the question to contrast us with any specific competitor, I think one of the things I think about this, and this was important to me when I was looking for my next job before I came to Betterment and has always been important to me broadly, is thinking about the motivations of the company, of the founders, of the people in charge in particular, and why they're doing what they're doing. That can tell you a lot about what's going to be different in the company that's sometimes hard to see on the surface. And so, you know, for Betterment, one of the things that attracted me is John Stein and the founding team were very motivated by solving a problem, right? Betterment wasn't the result of a couple folks starting a business because they just wanted to build a business and get rich, and they pivoted until they found a market. Betterment existed as it was from the very beginning, solving the problems it sought out to solve, because in John Stein's case, he came from the banking consulting world and he had seen the inside of financial services and he didn't think it was doing a good enough job servicing the needs of customers. It was far too focused on simply enriching the businesses. And he set out to attack that mission, to attack that problem. And that's pretty appealing to me. And I would just start there with contrasting us with any particular competitor you want to think about. Where did they really come from? What was the point of the company? Is that what they actually set out to do from the beginning? I think that's an important differentiator. And I think that reveals itself as the company grows and shapes over time. And so For example, on the Betterment side, we've had a lot of humility in attacking this problem because we're thinking about customers, which allows us to do things like continue to incorporate humans into the picture. Right? If you were trying to build just the lowest margin business you could to scale it, you might do something different. You might, you know, try to totally automate everything, cut out humans entirely, and just build a large margin business. Or you might want to go a different route and, you know, hire a ton of financial planners and charge a ton of money for customers to use those services, because that will drive your business. And so when you look at us relative to a Wealthfront or a Personal Capital or some of the other robo-advisors, I think you'll see some of those differences where, you know, Betterment is trying to take a balanced customer-centric approach and do the right thing for the customer, even if it means do something like withdraw money from Betterment to your external checking account simply because it's the right thing to do. I don't think you'll find anyone else doing that. And I think that's a pretty big deal. When it gets into the guts of investing, when it gets into the guts of how these banking services work, there's not going to be quite as much differentiation, right? A lot of folks have tax loss harvesting. A lot of folks have some of these other features. But again, I think Betterment does a very good job of going deeper and informing its customers and helping them make the right decisions at the right time. I'll give you an example of one feature Betterment has that, to my knowledge, no one else has really built anything comparable. And we released this many, many years ago. It's called Tax Impact Preview. And the simple idea is when you as a customer want to withdraw money or change your allocation, that tends to have tax consequences. If it's, you know, invested dollars, right? You're going to have to sell some shares. That's going to probably have a tax impact. We will tell you what the actual affected tax slots are going to be. We will tell you the short-term and long-term capital gains are likely to be based on taking that action. So we're just doing a lot more to inform people and help them make the best decisions day to day than I really think anyone else is doing.
Awesome. And then taking it one step further, as far as investing, right? So there's Robinhood and Acorns and that other segment of this whole thing. How have those types of products impacted the market in general?
Absolutely. So a lot of the companies you mentioned have been around for many years now, and they've broadened the market in a lot of different ways. They have helped a lot of people who otherwise might not have started investing or considered it or been a little bit scared away, right? Especially, you know, for millennials in the 2008 mortgage crisis, which led to pretty bad market returns. You saw a lot of people shy away from investing and kind of swear it off, right? Like, oh my goodness, like, why would I take on that much risk? I can lose so much money. I think a lot of those companies helped people really get started and really warm up to the idea that investing is approachable and might be worthwhile. I think that's sort of the optimistic, positive outlook on it. On the flip side, I do get a little bit concerned on the impact some companies have on the outcomes for their customers. Right? I hear like a lot of companies say they're customer centric. I've expressed that Betterment is customer centric. And I might actually go further to say that we're customer outcome centric. We're not just trying to focus on customers to grow our customer count and our revenues. We're actually trying to help them achieve their goals and achieve better outcomes. Something that can happen when you're extremely customer centric, but not focused on the outcome, is building tools that might make it easier or more fun, or even kind of feel like you're scratching that gambling itch to make investing not really service you, really not help your outcomes. Right? Like there's this funny subreddit called Wall Street Bets that you can take a look at sometime, just full of people who've, you know, been pulled into these various services and have lost a lot of money, right? You know, zero commission stock trades is very, very cool in that it brings down costs for customers. But should the average American be doing a lot of stock trading very regularly? The research makes it pretty clear that that doesn't lead to good outcomes for most people. So making those things more approachable might not be servicing those folks very well. So that's a little bit of the downside and the dark side that I see from some of this. And so part of what Betterment tries to do with those audiences that have warmed up to investing a little bit is talk about our long-term philosophy, how we think about providing the best possible outcomes in any market scenario, and really overcome some of those, you know, shorter term might feel more like a fun game than actually be responsible long-term investing that's something we think a little bit about. And I think about with the financial services industry and like where it's gone in the past several years.
Yeah, it's funny you said that about, you know, day trading and people getting into trying to do their own stock investments and stock trading and things like that. And there's certainly something kind of attractive about it and something kind of magical almost about being able to trade your own stocks. But yeah, if you don't have the right knowledge and you're not willing to do the right research, like you said, you're just kind of gambling your money away for the most part. So it's good that companies like Betterment are in place to guide people in the right way. Obviously, you still make your own decisions, but you've got a lot more tools available at your disposal to make it palatable and allow you to go on a journey versus trying to, you know, hit it big all at one time, if you will, which I think a lot of people try to do.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know,
so this is great. And so I want to switch gears now to talk about the technology side of it. First thing that I think a lot of people would ask is that you would assume that a company that is large and as forward thinking as Betterment would be cloud based. So just kind of quickly run us through your cloud setup or kind of what you're doing in the cloud and taking advantage of those services.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Basically, the first thing I did in 2013 when I took the job at Betterment, at the time, Betterment was hosted on Rackspace. And I don't mean Rackspace Cloud, I mean Rackspace, like actual data centers. We had just a handful of servers on a rack that we had direct access to. That was how we managed the entire infrastructure for the company, which was totally reasonable at the time and made sense and at the scale we were at. But one of the first things as I did was shift everything over to AWS. And so I had used Amazon Web Services before. Obviously, the cloud unlocks a ton of advantages, and we moved absolutely everything over. It took a little bit of time. We had to do it thoughtfully, but almost everything we do today is on AWS.
Perfect. And then, so obviously, AWS has a lot of services and things that can help you with data science and data engineering, data warehousing, whatever it might be. So surely there's some complex data science and ML going on in the background around what Betterment does. Just at a high level, obviously, I know it's proprietary and you can't really get into the details, but at a high level, just kind of walk us through what makes up Betterment's decision-making engine.
Sure. So we do a lot of things in-house to leverage the data that's available to us, right? You can imagine everything from pricing data, trends in the markets, our customers, what they're doing on the platform. Our customers often aggregate their external assets so we can provide them a more holistic financial picture and better advice. So we have access to that information. We don't sell any customer information, but we do use it to provide a better service and to improve those customer outcomes I talked about. We are using some things you actually mentioned directly in data warehousing and pulling all this stuff together for other purposes. We actually do use Amazon's Redshift for quite a bit of that. And in terms of decision-making engines, it's funny. There's like a few different areas where we're using different techniques to analyze data, right? And I mean this in a very broad sense, right? Some of these problems we face, you know, don't actually make sense for artificial intelligence or any like, you know, flavor of machine learning. Like they are reasonably deterministic, solvable problems that just need some linear algebra. And that's all we really need to throw at it. And other problems do warrant some of the more recent developments in data science. And so there's a couple areas where we're doing interesting things. What's also sort of funny is some of these things simply escalate and trigger human intervention, right? If markets are doing interesting thing over time, should we consider updating which ETFs we're using in our portfolios for customers to give them better expense ratios, better bid-ask spread? Maybe one of the ETFs has a really high tracking error. And so we're looking at a lot of that stuff and making decisions for customers at a human level that we then push into the system, and the system takes care of transitioning in a tax-efficient way and otherwise. In other cases, it's fraud, right? Like we are taking on a lot of assets day to day. You know, we manage well over $20 billion for 500,000 customers. And we are regularly being targeted for various types of fraud. People are trying to, you know, steal money in various ways. And we need to detect that and prevent that. And so we're using some interesting techniques on top of those data sets to prevent such things. And then there's really on the behavioral side, right, when a customer is doing certain things that might be suboptimal for their long-term outcome, right? When they're changing their allocation too much, which increases their tax burden, when they're being really reactive to daily market changes, what can we do to show them the right information, right? We're not trying to hide anything, but to show them their performance or remind them they're on track for the long term still, so they don't take any drastic action that undermines themselves. Like, those things are also part of like a decision engine, in that we will show you various things in the application or even test out new things, which comes with its own, you know, sort of split testing analysis to see which thing works better for our customers. And so there's just a lot of different things going on there that involve like pretty serious analysis and analytics and data science on top of those rather massive data sets. We have no shortage of problems where we can invest those sorts of techniques and provide even more value to customers.
And one thing that we talked about before we got on the show today was about kind of the huge swings in the market, right? And so that's changed, especially over the past 3.5 years, where if the market gained or lost 400 points in a day, it'd be like a huge deal 3 years ago, but now it's kind of the norm. So how does the AI compensate or ignore huge swings in the market?
Betterment isn't using any sort of like AI techniques to trade or change portfolios for customers in reaction to market events. You can think about Betterment as, we figure out your long-term financial goals. We help you take on a reasonable portfolio, a reasonable collection of investments that match your duration, your risk tolerance, right? So if it's a shorter duration, we will, you know, allocate more heavily towards bonds and ensure that there's less volatility and there is, you know, a higher certainty for the outcome you're looking for over that shorter time period. Whereas, of course, a much longer investment horizon, you would take on quite a bit more risk. And so on an ongoing active day-to-day basis, we're not injecting any sort of market-based decision-making in that sense, right? We're not trying to play the market with AI. So you have to pull that back a little bit. And so there's the piece I was mentioning a little bit before, where we do a lot to build our applications to provide you the right information without causing you to negative, like without, you know, pushing you to take the wrong action, right? We don't want to, you know, encourage you to trade just because the markets are choppy. We want to encourage you to stay the course if your goal is still on track, right? If your goal is off track because market changes have, you know, trended down in a more dramatic way than anticipated, we will tell you, hey, you're no longer on track. You should invest a little bit more money. Think about changing the horizon or otherwise. We will tell you what action you could consider taking. We do use a lot of, you know, advanced techniques in the actual portfolio construction methodology. We are regularly reviewing the portfolios we are suggesting to customers and ensuring that, you know, there aren't changes we should make. We're using a Black-Litterman model, which is heavily influenced on market cap weighting across the globe. And so we have to keep an eye on those things as the, you know, world economy shifts. The investment methodology drives you towards a different type of portfolio set. So we do make some of those changes over time, but it's not the day-to-day active stuff with machine learning and otherwise. We are trying to do what we call evidence-based investing, where we will do tax loss harvesting. We do the tax coordination things that I mentioned before. So we are trying to maximize your returns. It's actually a very active platform that's working for you every single day. It's just not trying to play the market.
No, that makes perfect sense. And that's one of the things that I kind of saw initially as kind of taking some of the human bias and kind of reaction out of it. So that makes sense that you're not using those swings to modify or change the behavior of the AI, but you're really going back to the roots and things that make sense for long-term decisions and not reactionary, but more proactive. So that certainly makes sense to me. Kind of taking that one step further as you look forward and kind of see how Betterment continues to evolve and become a better product for its customers, how do you see the AI continuing to disrupt the industry? Because I guess in my mind, initially, I was thinking at some point the AI would be so smart that it would see the trends and be able to make the changes for you. But as you've talked about already, that's not really what Betterment does. So what do you see being enhanced or improved or really kind of forward thinking for the AI or the ML or anything else that's really going to continue to disrupt this industry?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. Yeah, while we certainly don't play that market game, it is still a massive deal for us. There's still a ton of opportunity. I mentioned a couple of use cases earlier. One was around fraud. Using these techniques to just detect and prevent fraud, like that's important. And it's not just important to Betterment, right? Like obviously we want to reduce Betterment as a company's risk and liability because fraud, when it, you know, works, comes out of our pocket. Right? And so driving that down is important. And the reason that's important for our customers is because it allows us to provide a better service at a lower cost, right? Betterment passes on as much of those cost savings to customers as we can. And that's important. I think where you're going to see a lot more development and innovation from Betterment using AI and ML more directly in the customer's face is in expanding our product suite to cover all these different money and investing use cases. You're going to see a lot more advice and automation about the interplay between them, right? I mentioned, for example, that we have two-way sweep that moves money between your checking account and a Betterment cash reserve account. Well, that's actually a pretty simple thing to explain, but the actual analysis to do the spending, you know, analytics and figure out like how much money you're going to be spending in the future so that we can ensure there's enough money there. And if there's too much money, sweep some of it out. That's pretty complicated analysis to ensure that we're doing that reasonably well. You'll see more and more as we broaden the self-driving wallet between those use cases to your entire financial picture that AI and ML will be driving a lot of that intelligence and we'll be surfacing interesting things we learn along the way. You can imagine use cases as simple as, hey, this bill looks a little bit weird. Like it went up, or are you sure it's yours? Like just double check this particular transaction, right? Like as you have like all these accounts, do you really want to keep reading through every statement at the end of the month? Or would you rather have a tool that surfaces the important stuff for you? So that's simple to explain, but very, very hard to build. All the way to paycheck comes in, every dollar goes to the most optimal place, right? We will put it against retirement if it makes sense, or we'll put it against your checking account if that's what makes sense based on what's going on in your broader financial life. And you'll see more and more of this automation play out over time. I think, you know, and the way you probably look back to planning trips, millennials are a little bit young for this, but you might remember if you're one on the older side of the millennial range, planning a trip used to be terrible and painful. And now it's pretty easy to book a flight. It's pretty easy to even book a hotel. Even an international trip is not all that hard these days. I think you'll look back and you'll say like, I can't believe I was balancing my checkbook. I can't believe I was manually moving money between my checking account and my savings account. That stuff will look silly in the future when you look back. You'll just be like, I can't believe I ever did that stuff. That's where I think you'll see a lot of this really come to
fruition. It's so funny you say that. I do remember my dad specifically using a travel agent, right? So you called up somebody and said, hey, you know, I want to take a flight to Orlando, and this whole manual process. And now like there's 100 websites you can go to book a flight and be gone in 2 hours. That's so funny. That's really true.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up here, you already mentioned a ton of things that Betterment already offers, and looking forward to 2020 with the checking account that's coming about for all the people. What else is on the roadmap and the product realm that we can look forward to in the next couple of years?
Yeah. So I think part of what we'll be doing is iterating on and improving what we have today, right? We're launching a checking account, but we are far from done. There are a ton of features we want to continue adding. And I mentioned our customer focus on family before. Ensuring that we're building this product suite that serves families better will be, you know, a lot of innovation here and there in the experience, helping people share information and control across the accounts. So you'll see a lot of development there over the next year from us. You'll also see us work to continue pulling these pieces together, right? We talked about money automatically moving from, you know, your paycheck into checking is all the way to retirement. These are the sorts of things you'll see coming over the next several quarters for Betterment, right? That was not like in 10 years, I hope we get there. That is, we're working on it sort of stuff. So you'll see a lot of that. You'll also see Betterment continue to expand into other product verticals. I'm not ready to, you know, commit to any specific vertical, but we are, you know, talking to customers and learning more and more about their problems and trying to decide, you know, of the various products in the world today, mortgages, credit cards, different types of insurance, what are the types of products like that we should add to our platform where we can provide a better service to our customers, or if we provide that, we can make that function even better with some similar product on our platform. Like, what's the ways in which we should expand our entire product suite? So we see a lot more of that coming online too in the coming quarters. So those are some of the things I'm thinking about for the next year and beyond.
Fantastic. Well, this has been super informative, really great conversation. Again, this is Mike Royce, the president of retail at Betterment. Mike, thanks so much for being on FinTech Daily with us today.
Ben, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.